Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday, where we discuss the Olympic sports at Boise State. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, KBOI News Time, 8:39. Paul J., Bob, and Beck Rogar is with us this morning. Boise State women's tennis coach and soon-to-be father for the second time.
That's right.
We didn't know if you'd be here today.
I didn't know if I'd be here either. But
you have the cell phone, though, so you're ready. You could leave at any moment.
If you hear me yelling and running out the door, you'll know where I'm going. But, yeah, no, we're excited for welcoming baby number two and just yeah, it's been an awesome ride so far.
Plus, you have you got a busy weekend coming up, the Barb Chandler Classic, and tell us a little bit about the tournament and who's going to be here and what you expect.
Sure, it's going to be a great weekend of tennis. I mean, anytime we're hosting an event here, you know, our Boise tennis community comes out strong, and we love, you know, we love playing in front of our home fans and playing at home. So we're looking forward to that. We haven't had any home events so far this fall, but really just a chance for us to get out and compete against some really solid teams. We've got Montana, Eastern Washington, Idaho State's coming over, and then Utah State in conference team sending some players up as well. So it's going to be a great level, a lot of fun. I think one of the biggest things for us is just getting a chance to honor Barb Chandler, who's a pioneer of women's tennis, you know, in the world. I mean, literally, she was one of the original nine that helped start what is now the WTA Tour, and you know, has done so much for tennis here in Idaho. Started the Idaho Tennis Association, is the reason why there's tennis courts literally at every park that goes in here in Boise. Just an absolute, you know, legend in our world, and just a chance to kind of honor her. And she's 92 now, and hoping to have her out at the event. And she's a crack up. I mean, she's 92 going on, I think, 25. So we're excited to see her out this weekend and play some great tennis.
Yeah, when I came here 50, 60 years ago, she was here, and she was a vital force in the community doing all of the things you said.
Absolutely.
And she's absolutely incredible. I saw her not too long ago.
Yeah, she's doing great.
Yeah.
I mean, she's
you know, awesome.
Comes to our home matches. She dons the blue and orange. She's got these awesome blue and orange leggings that she's a Bronco through and through. And so I just, you know, she's meant so much to us. And she's come and you know, had conversations with our players and just giving our younger players a sense of the history of the game and you know, what people have done for us to be able to do what we get to do every day. Because it's easy to wake up and we see our great facilities and all these things with college athletics that we get to do. But, you know, kind of being reminded that along the line somewhere, somebody had to fight for that and get in the back of a Winnebago and drive around the country for, you know, 9 months out of the year, you know, making, you know, $5 per summer winning these huge events. I mean, she's like a three-time quarterfinalist in the what is now the U.S. Open, and it's just incredible what she's done for the game.
Well, and you think about it, too, in the game of tennis. Think of all the different things she's seen as far as just in the development of the racket.
I
mean,
sure.
You know, you look at the pictures of different, you know, things of what they played with,
yeah,
and then now what they play with. I mean, it was much more difficult.
Oh, it's a different world. It's a different world, I'm sure. I mean, they used to play with cat gut strings. And I mean, that's like, yeah, that's yeah, just crazy
that.
Things. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, yeah, she's seen it all, I'm sure, but just a great person, and we're excited.
Now, tell us about the format. I know sometimes in the fall it's sort of like a wide-open tournament, and then sometimes you play flights. What do you have this weekend?
Yeah, we've got the blue and orange flight, and so we'll have the two singles flights of 16 players each, and then we've got one flight of all 16 doubles teams. So all 32 players will mix into the same draw for doubles. But we've got, yeah, basically our blue flight will be the top flight. Our orange flight will be the second flight. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you win, you move on. You don't, you go into a feeding constellation. And then if you're done and done, then we'll sign up for extra matches. It's just going to be
so
a lot of tennis.
So is the ultimate thing for a coach in this tournament to have a finalist against a finalist where you have to sit there quietly as
absolutely
one player from your team plays one
that
player
makes
from
your job
your
easy
team?
That makes your job easy. You're just taking notes at that point. So it's yeah, no, and you know, we've been fortunate enough to have that a fair amount in the past in this tournament. So you know, our players are ready to get out there and mix it up, and it's good for them to play each other in a tournament format now and then too.
I was gonna say, is there a different feel when you play, you mentioned what Montana's coming, right?
Yes.
If you play somebody from Montana and then let's say you win and the next match you have to play a teammate.
Sure, it's night and day. I mean, yeah. you know. But those guys, they, you know, the one thing that I'll say about our team right now is they're great at competing against each other in practice too. That's one of the reasons why we've taken, I think, some big jumps forward as a program is, you know, they're really mixing it up and they know how to go after it hard, and then they leave it out there and then it's done and that type of thing. So they're so close, I think, off the court that allows them to really kind of, you know, see the game for what it is and really compete against each other when it counts, and then, you know, go to the Boise River Cafe for some dinner later, you know.
And the location, going to be outside?
We're going to be inside.
You're going to be, it's going to be so beautiful.
I know, but we're a little bit worried about just making sure that we get all the matches in. When you got the teams traveling in so far, yep, it's going to be, you know, important that you make sure that they get the tennis that they signed up for. So we're going to be indoors to start.
We need to take a short break. Our guest is Beck Rogar of Boise State's women's tennis team.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
Talking with Beck Rogar, Beck Rogar, the tennis coach, women's tennis coach at Boise State. How's Dokic doing?
Dokic is doing great. Yeah, she's awesome. She, she's one of the best players in college tennis. I mean, and that's something to be proud of. But I also, you know, to see her kind of go through the growing process this fall has been really neat too. I mean, when we got her in January last year, you know, sure, we're coaching her on the court against how to beat, you know, XYZ player that she's playing that day, but we really didn't get a chance to kind of get our hands on her game and make changes that we think will help her progress, you know, to an even higher level. So this fall has really been awesome, you know, to see her kind of embrace that. And sometimes that comes with, you know, a step back and feeling like out of your comfort zone and having to kind of navigate that again. And these high-level players, it's, you know, it's harder to get better. You're close to your peak, you know, and so it's harder to get better. You have to put in more hours, more focused time, and just to see her kind of really learn and grab onto that has been really cool for us, and I think it's gonna pay off for us big time here in the spring when she's got those things down.
Tell us some of the other players you've got, because I know you've got a couple new ones and a couple back from last year.
Yeah, we've got a couple. I'll start with our Shield Maidens, our two freshmen, one from Sweden and one from Denmark. So we've got Vanessa Tim from Denmark and Wilhelmina Palmer from Sweden, and they're just they're lights out. I mean, in terms of their level of play and their work ethic, it's, you know, a lot of times you'll get freshmen in and they have that freshman energy. These guys have the freshman energy plus the freshman, like this experience that they are bringing to the team that a lot of freshmen don't have. And so just in terms of how disciplined and professional they are in their preparations and just their attitudes, they're so coachable. They're bringing so much to our team and are they're just fun. They're smiles on their face. We had to leave for a flight in LAX at 3:30 a.m. and I didn't, you know, I expected everybody to kind of trudge down with their bags, and these guys are like smiling and laughing. I mean, they just bring great energy. So they've been a lot of fun. And then we've got some really, really great returners that have been, you know, the high parts of our lineup. Lillian Poling is back as a sophomore. She's from New York, and she put in probably the best summer of anybody in college tennis. I mean, she played, you know, these 25K events and a bunch of, you know, professional events and just getting ready for this season, and that's going to pay off big. And Hannah Kontenvein, she was the runner-up for Mountain West Freshman of the Year her freshman year, and has just been, honored a lot in terms of the all-conference team. She's back for us and just playing solid. So we're excited. You know, we've got one senior, Nancy Menjivar, and one junior in Hannah, and the rest of us are sophomores and freshmen and just hungry and eager to get out there and compete.
What does it take to have such a young team and to get them cohesive?
That's a great question. I mean, and that's something we've spent a lot of time, you know, trying to answer. But, you know, I think, again, we've been really fortunate. We work really hard to make sure that we get to know these young ladies before they come here. And you know, we have a standard of the type of person, not just the type of player that we want to recruit. And you know, I'm proud to say that we've kind of, you know, hit the jackpot the last few years here at our recruiting classes, where, you know, that cohesiveness hasn't been nearly as hard to work for, you know, because they come in and they're just those type of people that want to be part of something special and bigger than themselves, and they share the vision that we have for where we want our program to go. And so, you know, it's been really fun this year because it's just kind of taken on a life of its own, and just, you know, they're running with it. So this is as close as a team as we've ever had. And, you know, when you're fighting for each other and playing for each other out there, it definitely makes a difference in what you're, you know, able to do.
And I know this is a ways down the road. It's the last weekend in April, but you're hosting the Mountain West Championships.
Yes.
Rotates around. They move it around. It's your guys' turn to host.
We are so excited. You know, the last time we hosted was in 2011. That was actually my first year here with the women's program, and we lost in the finals 4-3 to Fresno State. I still lose sleep over that match, so I'm looking forward to getting the tournament back here. And you know, Boise State does an unbelievable job when, you know, putting on the championships. As you know, you were there last year commentating, and just it was a phenomenal, you know, production from start to finish. And so I'm just really excited. You know, all the teams in the conference are excited to come back to Boise for the tournament. They know it's always great here. And so, yeah, I think, you know, nothing like playing at home for the conference championships. Definitely gives us an edge going into that tournament. And we'll be excited to mix it up and hopefully finish on top.
With the two freshmen, how do you acclimate them toward a conference championship?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's no replacing experience. So obviously we just want to throw them in the fire, you know, and that's what we've done this fall, is really just get them as many matches as we can possibly play them in. But it's been great for us. You know, I mean, we actually got to take four players to the All-American Championships this year, which is, that's the first time in at least 10, 15 years that that's happened, having that many players there. And two of those were our freshmen. And so for them to get that experience, you know, the highest level of college tennis, right away qualifying for that was just incredible for them. You know, you go out and you mix it up with all the quote-unquote big-time programs, and it's one of those things where, you know, then when you're playing your tournament season and your, you know, your dual match season, it's kind of like nothing really scares you, nothing bothers you, because you've been there and seen it all before. So that's really what we're trying to do, just get them as much experience as we can. And like I said, they came in pretty experienced and pretty mature, you know, on their own. So I'm confident they're going to come in and do a great job for us.
Well, you got the Barb Chandler starting Friday, all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yep.
Good luck with the tournament, and go have that baby.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, you guys. And go Broncos.
Thanks. Beck Rogar, KBOI News Time, 8:53.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Got just a few seconds. Busy week for Bob.
Yes, it is. Coach's show, 7 o'clock on Thursday, and then we've got another later game at Utah State, 8 o'clock kickoff. Bronco game day will start at 3, and good news for people that like earlier games, 5 o'clock with Nevada the first weekend in November.
Gotta like that. Hopefully a little cleaner game down at Utah State this time.
Yeah, 8 turnovers. I don't think we'll have 8 turnovers. I think that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Hopefully.
So, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That was the last meeting, 52-26, but the Broncos won last year 21-10.
They did. All right, thanks, Bob. It's 8:56. We'll be back.
If you're talking about it...
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning. Our thanks to Beck Rogar. He was... distracted today.
Oh, Beck Rogar? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Women's tennis coach at Boise State University, and his wife is expecting probably any moment.
Yeah, extremely on the nest.
They have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and they're expecting their second child, and they
don't know what it is.
Yeah, they don't know whether it's a boy or girl yet, so.
That's kind of unusual these days.
I thought it was funny that when they first told their little girl about it, the first thing she thought for a second, and she said, "The baby won't play with my toys, right?"
Yeah.
Yes, it probably will.
Yeah, Natalie.
Probably will bite them as well.
Natalie she was an only child. She said when she was like 19, "Wish I'd had a sister." I'm going, "No, you don't." You've gotten everything. If you'd have had to share anything,
yeah.
How about if you wanted to use your car?
Well, it's the same as
and your sister had it.
People who, you know, lived in the city their whole life wishing they'd grown up in the country, and yeah. people who grew up in the country wishing they'd lived in the city, and yeah. back and forth. And
take what you got. That is good. All right. We're going to talk about infringement of rights on other people. Chris has a story about yeah. breaking car windows.
Well, we talked about this just about an hour ago, just for a few minutes. And we'll start with this morning. Now, there is a bill that's being introduced in Kentucky, and it could keep people from having to pay if they try to save an animal from a hot car. There's a law in Kentucky right now that says if you see a child in distress in a car because of the heat, like in the middle of the summer, you know, it's 100 mm-hmm. degrees outside, child's in the car, child's obviously in distress,
could
turning
die.
Red, whatever,
yeah.
and you can't, you know, open the doors and get into the car, that you can bust the window, save the child, and nobody can sue you for, you know, whatever
the
cost
buying a window,
break the, you know, whatever damage you did to the car, right. nobody can do anything to you. However, they've never had that same law for a pet, most likely a dog, and they are going to change it now to where the same will apply to a dog. That if you leave your dog in your car, and it kind of depends. I wonder how they will. I wonder how they will prove that a dog was in distress. Because if somebody literally, you know, runs into a store for 2 minutes and runs back out, and somebody has broken their window and taken their dog, or at least just taken it out of the car.
And we're both dog owners, and we know how a dog can, in 2 minutes,
yeah.
look like he's absolutely on the way out.
Yeah, panting.
Because he's so hot.
Right.
So you're right. It's going to be harder to tell.
I just wonder what kind of fights are going to start over something like this. If people do, in fact, you know, somebody says, I just ran in. It's, you know, let's say they're out front of a convenience store. I just ran into the store. My dog is fine, and you broke my window. No, your dog wasn't fine. Yes, it was. I've been in there for 45 seconds.
So you would probably have to get the clerk at the store to testify, and maybe somebody who yeah. was with the person who broke the window to testify. Could be messy.
Well, it could.
What do you think?
Well,
I would tend to err on the side of saving the dog.
Yeah.
Even though,
well,
I guess
let's
it could cost me a couple $100.
Well, let's put it this way. If the dog is lying there and its tongue is hanging out and it looks like its
eyes are rolling back in
yeah,
its
something
head.
Of that nature, I would probably be inclined to do something. If the dog is simply jumping around, you know, looking like it wants to get out of the car, I probably wouldn't be inclined to do something. I might hang around and wait and see if it takes a while for the people to get back.
True, because if the windows, if there's not a window rolled down anywhere,
yeah,
boy, it takes like no time,
yeah,
for a car to get up over 100,
yeah, and well over, like, you know, cars can be like 150 degrees inside,
yep. like being in a microwave,
yeah.
So,
but what this bill would do, it would allow people to break into a car to save, and of course, you can already do this with a child, but it would allow them to break into a car and save a pet. And then they would be under no obligation to pay for the damage that they did to the car.
I'm for it, I guess.
Yeah, I just, you know, it seems to me like,
because I'm not going to leave my dog in the car.
Yeah, well, yeah. Would you have to stand there for 5 minutes and make sure the people didn't come back first?
I don't know. Put a time thing on
it? There could be. There could be a lot of... stipulations to the rule. I don't think necessarily that you can just see a dog inside a car and break the window and be okay. You know, and besides, like, you know, what if it's 40 degrees out?
Yeah. All right. Now, here's something a little bit different.
All right.
But still, in my mind, an obvious infringement upon somebody's rights. A Massachusetts mom says her 7-year-old daughter's head was shaved bald without her permission. Little Heroes Group Home in Massachusetts had Denise Robinson's daughter, True, had her head shaved a week ago. Robinson said her daughter, who previously had hair down her back, was told the decision was made because of hygiene. There was no hygienical reason for them to shave my child's head, the mother said.
So there was no lousy reason.
No lice, yeah. Etc. There was no head lice. There were no bed bugs. There was no what I refer to as Rasta locks going on. Robinson, who is now working with a lawyer, said her hair was 2 ponytails on the side on Saturday and braided in the ponytails, and there was nothing wrong. And there's a picture of her here, and her hair looks fine to me.
Yeah.
Of course it would, you know. Before the haircut, Robinson's attorney, Richard Kendall, said a school volunteer told True that the girl, not the mother,
right,
by shaving her head, her hair would grow back straight. Really?
Is she black?
Kind of.
Okay, so these people are then...
mixed race.
Okay, but the people running the school, are they idiots?
Maybe.
They might have to pay up.
The mom told NECN she feels like her daughter, who already has severe emotional issues, was violated.
Well, they did shave her head.
How can they do that without permission?
I don't think they
can.
Of the
parent.
I don't think they can. It's like you said. They said it was a hygienic issue, but there wasn't anything wrong. There were no lice.
I mean, really?
Okay, she had long, thick hair.
Long, thick hair.
That's
it. It's more wavy than curly.
And it doesn't look like it hasn't been taken care of. It looks like it has. We need to take a quick break. It's 9:15. We will be right back.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:21. There's the quickened edition of I Fought the Law, and the law won. 9:21.
That was kind of quick, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. KBOI rewards code, BREAK, BREAK, as in breaking a window.
Yeah.
BREAK, break.
Couple other things to mention. Robert Mueller. I mean, we all know who Robert Mueller is. He's the guy that's been investigating Russia and our November election, and has been doing so now for several months, and apparently meticulously. And I don't want to say taking his time, because I don't know how long it takes. You know, if you're looking for answers, you keep looking until you find answers. But it's been going on for some time now. And he also now is investigating a Democrat lobbyist named Tony Podesta.
Mm-hmm.
He is reportedly going to be investigated by Robert Mueller as the special counsel's office probes whether his firm violated federal law. NBC News first reported that Podesta and his lobbying firm are now subjects in the special counsel's Russia investigation. This follows inquiries regarding former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort's finances. According to Monday's NBC News report, Manafort organized a PR campaign for the European Center for a Modern Ukraine, which reportedly was backed by a pro-Russian party. The Podesta Group reportedly was one of the many firms that worked on the campaign for the pro-Ukraine nonprofit. And the reason this is just kind of interesting is that this is a Democrat lobbyist, and this is really one of the first instances in which both parties now are involved or possibly are involved in, or are being investigated anyway in this particular. You know, the investigation is for collusion, but the investigation also is to simply find out if the Russians really did have something to do with our election.
Hmm.
You know, whether the outcome or whether they changed anything or whether they changed people's attitudes. And they're on social media, they clearly bought some ads and did some things like that. But it's not entirely clear what the results were.
Is anybody going to believe anything that comes out of this?
Probably not. It'll probably be like, now we were talking about the JFK investigation.
Yes.
And that's going to be opened up, and there are some files that have been closed for some time, and we don't know what's in them. When we find out, my guess is we won't be terribly surprised by whatever's in them, but they've been sealed for whatever reason for the last 50 years.
Right.
And when they are opened, people will still be suspicious, even if it says, nope, clearly all we ever found was that there was a single bullet theory and Oswald did everything, blah, blah,
yep.
blah. People will still not believe that. And regardless, I think, of what Mueller finds, depending upon whose favor it is in, that, you know, those people will believe and the people on the opposing side won't.
So true.
And that's all there is to that. I mean, it really won't necessarily be based on, you know, here's what we've proven. No, you didn't. And, but that's kind of the way things are now when it comes to social media, and with so many different news sites and things like that, is that it doesn't matter what happens. People say, well, just stick to the facts. Well, okay, but
I guess we can't give up searching for the truth.
Which ones are real?
Exactly.
And, of course, that brings up the discussion about you go back in history and whatever we think happened in history is based on whoever wrote it down.
True.
It's 9:26. We'll be back.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:39, Paul J. Chris and Mick Jagger.
And Todd. Bob wrote in, I was talking about the Mueller investigation that they've...
Yes.
They've expanded it, and they've kept looking into different things. And Bob says, after almost a whole year of multiple investigations of collusion on Trump's part, don't you think someone would have found one thing linking him to it? Nothing so far. Why? Because it's not there. I don't know if they're going to find anything linking him to it, but they're trying to find out if they can link anybody to it. And, yeah, I believe they should look at virtually everything that was involved in the election at all in every state. Just because I don't want the Russians to get away with something. You know, I don't necessarily think that the Republicans or the Democrats, I mean...
Are we making the Russians look too good?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It depends on whether or not they're guilty, and that's not... of course, that's not up to me. He also says Mueller and his team have already decided someone is guilty of something. They will look until they find a crime on someone. It just won't be Donald Trump. And it doesn't necessarily have to be. It's an investigation. And an investigation, if you are trying to find just dirt on one person, then you're doing it wrong. If you're letting the facts fall, you know, into place and figuring out whether anything's been done and then who did it and let the facts guide you, then you're doing it correctly. Now, I know that just from watching detective shows.
Yeah.
Because they always say that.
Yeah.
You're just trying to prove he did it, and that's wrong. Well, and it is wrong.
But I think I've proved he did it, so.
Well, and who knows what they'll prove.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of circumstantial things that, there are plenty of articles that are written. Let's use a popular slogan here. There are plenty of articles written on both sides that are based entirely on circumstances, mm-hmm. circumstantial evidence of different things.
Yeah, like
But I'm not going to say they have nothing on anybody, because they might.
The Democrats now are receiving a lot of pressure on the on these Russian things.
Yeah.
After they tried to pin a lot of stuff, if you will, on Republicans. With Clinton help and Obama administration knowledge,
yeah.
The biggest fake news story is the uranium thing. And which is Hillary Clinton. Republicans say Democrats need to explain now that fresh developments raise questions about their own Russian connections.
Mm-hmm.
First came reports that the FBI knew about a Russian bribery plot tied to nuclear energy, interest in the U.S. well before the Obama administration okayed a mining company sale to a Russian firm, giving it partial control.
And there again, I mean, you can read articles that tell you that the Canadians are the ones who sold something to the Russians, and that it was for energy. Because, you know, nuclear energy exists as well as nuclear weapons. So I don't know. And I'd say just keep reading the news and read whatever you trust. And if it turns out what you trust is wrong, read somebody else.
All right. Let's go to John in Boise. John, good morning.
How are you today?
Good.
All right. Well, let's just use this uranium one thing as a point for everybody.
Sure.
So, you know, a while back there was mention of this story, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's been, I don't know, maybe half a year or greater, probably longer. I don't remember myself. But I remember reading about it and trying to how to wrap my head around why we would even think about doing that. Right?
Right.
Because we can't on one hand say that Russia is our enemy and then turn around and give them access to uranium. I mean,
one would think, right?
Well, and technically, they're our ally.
Well, okay, then if they're our ally, then why are we worried about them infiltrating our electoral system?
Because, as I said, technically, they're our ally. It doesn't mean they're completely allied with us in everything.
Right. Well,
now Uranium One's headquarters are in Toronto. Okay, so that is in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In January of 2013, it's like you said, you know, 4 years ago, what was the name of the, anyway, there was a Russian state-owned enterprise, Rose something.
Rosatom Nuclear.
Okay, Rosatom, that was
right.
They, through a subsidiary, purchased the company.
In 2010.
They purchased Uranium One. At a cost of $1.3 billion. Mm-hmm. And that's what started the whole thing.
Well, but my whole point here is not necessarily what actually happened.
Right.
In the sense of who did what. What we're getting, what I guess why I called was what you were talking about. You know, you have to read both sides of the story and then make up your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if Uranium One was getting through while the last president was in office, the news should be telling us whether he did or didn't do that correctly. I mean, they're telling us everything else about everybody under the sun.
Yeah, and
whether they're doing it right or wrong.
Now, the transaction. Sorry.
Right. Well,
I was going to say the transaction when the Canadian company was sold to this group of Russians, the transaction was reviewed in the United States by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And apparently it went through, so they must have said, you know, okay, I guess there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, but that would be the whole, that's in the sense, that's a story of what is happening in that. But you can't complain on one hand that they're the enemy and then turn around and say that they're our partners or this is legal.
However, that happens all the time.
Well, I can tell you right now, even in our own locality, the United States or the state of Idaho does not own its water resource.
Yeah.
Suez does.
Mm-hmm. And they're a company out of France.
Hey, there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Good stuff.
We need to get to a break. Thank you for the call. It's 9:47.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
Got some instant messages here. Lee of Eagle says, Bill Clinton received a $500,000 speaking fee from the Russians after Hillary brokered the uranium deal. And Mari says, excuse me, allies don't get to infiltrate our electorate system. Sheesh, what on earth is that guy thinking? And Bob says, Hillary and Eric Holder were on the committee that okayed the uranium deal. Can you say fox in the hen house? And magically, about that time, $140 million was given to the Clinton Foundation by people who would profit from the uranium deal. And also, he mentioned in the Mueller investigation, he says, you know they want Trump, so anyone else is a fail. Now, that I don't necessarily agree with that 100%. I understand.
I agree with that about 80%.
I understand that if somebody is out to get Trump, then yeah, they want Trump. But if they can get the Trump campaign, I think that they feel like they've got him. Now, he will say that he and his campaign are not the same person. And I suppose, you know, I would probably make the you know, if I were running for something and my campaign did something and I, whether I knew about it or not, I would say that it was them, it wasn't me. But, you know, when Nixon did that, no one believed him.
Yeah. And
well, they believed him until there were tapes that proved that he knew about it anyway. So.
And now the whole thing is just so bizarre.
Well, it is.
So bizarre.
And that's why it's being investigated. And if it turns out they find nothing. And see, that'll be the biggest disappointment in the world for a whole lot of people. Is if Mueller finally reads his report or, you know, one day and says,
there's nothing here.
Nothing to get in a tizzy about.
Which could happen. Could happen.
And like I said, the people who already don't like one side or the other are simply either going to believe or not believe what they want.
Yeah, the number of minds changed by this whole thing.
Yeah, not a lot.
Minute. So
yeah,
all right.
Well, and it's like they were talking about the gerrymandering and all that sort of thing.
Sure.
In modern times, you don't go out and change people's minds about a subject. You simply get them to vote.
Yeah, true.
And if you get the right number of people to vote,
sometimes it works
either
way.
Because you're going to find a lot of people who believe all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you are. All right, that'll do it for today's show. We'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning right here on News Talk 670 KBOI. Have a good day.